I talked to this doctor about it after we had a month in the hospital, and he said, and I said, I'd like to take him to Holland and I'd like to treat him with cannabis. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, and his words were, you have no choice, because if you don't trial, you'll never know. Nice. And I thank the Lord that I met a doctor that actually amazing. Was supportive of my choices and his father's choices, a decision for our child.
This is the Cannabis Enigma, cutting through the smoke to have informed, serious conversations for regular people. Hi, I'm Michael Schaefer-Ummerman.
And I'm Alana Goldberg.
Hi, Alana. So you recently spoke with Hannah Deacon. Hannah is the mother of Alfie, who many of you may have heard of. He was one of the more famous cases of an epileptic child who led to a lot of change in the way that medical cannabis has been received in the UK. Can you tell us a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's basically the interview that we're about to listen to, is their story. Alfie has a really rare form of epilepsy. He's actually one of only 9 children in the world that have this genetic mutation. And luckily, he was born to parents who were willing to fight to get him the treatment that they believed was right for him. One of the things that really stood out about the story that Hannah told me was that they actually had to move to another country to even try the treatment legally. They moved over from the UK to Holland for 5 months. And that's something that happens all over the world, is this kind of cannabis refugee movement. And it was really difficult for them as a family with young children to move to another country just to access medical treatment.
Wow. I mean, that's a really huge step to take. But I mean, I guess it speaks to what the story is about, which is a mother or parents doing whatever it takes to get treatment for their child that works.
Yeah, absolutely. And we speak about this a bit at the end of the interview, but Hannah has now got the treatment that she needs for her son and is now fighting to make sure that other children and other patients can access all different types of medical cannabis products in the UK now.
Is there anything else about the interview that really stuck with you?
Jeez, put me on the spot. Yeah, one of the things that struck me in this conversation and also other conversations I had during the Cannabis Europa conference in Madrid, where this interview was recorded, was how often it's parents that are seeking treatment for their children that end up driving cannabis reform.
Well, let's listen to your interview with Hannah Deacon. And just a reminder that if you like this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever else you listen to podcasts. It really helps other people find us.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'd love to hear, first of all, how you got into the industry. I understand it's through your personal story.
Yeah. I didn't really know anything about cannabis as medicine until I had my son, Alfie. At 8 months old, he had his first seizure. I found him in bed at night having a seizure. Up until that point, he was quite unwell from the age of 4 months with recurring infections, needed hospital treatment a few times for temperatures. And he had his first seizure then. We were in hospital for 4 months with him. He wouldn't stop having seizures. He was given 9 anti-epileptics over the course of the first few weeks, which didn't do anything. He was on a life support machine. We ended up at Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, and we were told that he would probably die, which was incredibly hard. Never ever experienced a seizure, let alone a position where you might lose a child before. And then the doctor said to us, we'll try steroids. It may be that he's having an immune response. So, because they did a test which showed a lot of blood cells in his brain and his blood. So they gave him intravenous methylprednisolone, which is what you give for like anaphylactic reactions. Okay. It's like used for very severe allergic reactions. And it worked, and he stopped having seizures. He was diagnosed at that point with immune responsive epilepsy. We went home and he was on pulse steroids and Keppra, and he was weaned off that and he was fine. So we just thought it might have been a isolated event. And unfortunately, again, he had another cluster of seizures 8 months later.
How old was he by this point?
By this point, he was about 14 months.
Okay.
So 15 months, and then it carried on reoccurring every 8 months. And when he had clusters of seizures, he would have hundreds of seizures. Yeah. He would lose all his skills, so he couldn't sit, he couldn't eat. You know, he would be very, very decimated by them. Every time they were steroid responsive, and every time he would have a lot of seizures, and we were in hospital for a couple of weeks, and then we'd be home, and we'd have to rehabilitate him, and then it would happen again. So, and we said to our neurologist at the time, this is cyclical, you know, it's happening pretty much the day every 8 months. Yeah. And he said, oh, no, he's had all the genetic testing, he's not got anything genetically wrong with him. And then age 4, his cluster started coming every 3 weeks, the same thing. And then age 5, it was every week. So his condition was just getting worse and worse. Age 5, he was diagnosed with a condition called PCDH19, which is usually a condition that only affects girls. For us, it's non-inherited. So it's a genetic condition that just happened. And he's one of 9 boys. So
as in my, the world.
In the world. Wow. As my partner always says, we can't win the lottery, but we did that.
Good odds or bad odds.
It's, you know, very, very rare. He's probably, out of the 9 boys, he's the only boy that requires steroids to abate his seizures. So in that sense, he's unique. So at that point, when we were diagnosed, I realized that the doctors that were talking to me didn't know anything about this condition. And really, at the time, they were always experimenting on him. They didn't know what to do for him. He was given a lot of drugs, which at the time I didn't realize, but that were unlicensed, that were untested for children, that were, you know, I understand, you know, not to be negative about the doctors, they were trying to help him, but, you know, it's really important that I think people realize that actually a lot of medicines that our children are given are experiments. They're licensed for adults. They're not licensed for children a lot of the time because they don't have the data. And when I started to think about that, I started to question, well, is this the right thing for my child? Because at the moment he's really sick. And then I started to do research because I knew that he responded to steroids. And what do steroids do? They suppress your immune response. Right. They balance your immune system. So I started to think, well, is there something natural? I went on quite a big journey in natural health, and and we changed our diets and we looked at things like that as well, and especially for him. And I realized that actually there may be something natural that could balance his immune system that wouldn't be so toxic, because I kept being told that if we kept giving Alfie steroids, it could cause him to have a heart attack or it could cause psychosis. And we did have a condition as well. PCDH19 does cause behavior problems in children because of the way it affects the brain. So we were really, you know, against it, to be honest. And I came across medical cannabis, basically. I just kept looking and searching, and I found lots of sites on Facebook where people were discussing using cannabis for children in America, mostly. And I thought, well, this is really interesting, because some people were reporting a massive reduction in seizures. Some people were reporting cognitive improvement. I joined a really good site called Whole Plant for Cannabis, which is based in America. That's for autism. Yeah. But there is advice on their epilepsy. And seeing videos of children who were punching holes in walls and then suddenly sitting there quietly watching telly with their family. It's amazing. A miracle. And I just thought, wow. And we were being told by doctors all the time that Alfie could die. And I just kept thinking to myself, well, if I have to stand by his graveside, and it makes me feel quite upset to even think about it, I want to know as a mother that I've done everything I can to keep him alive. And I don't care if it's illegal in the UK, I want to try it. So I went to see his neurologist and said, you know, I've done research into medical cannabis, and anecdotally, it looks like it's something we want to try. And he told me about the Epidiolex trial, which was going on at the time. And we did apply for that trial. Unfortunately, we were refused that trial because Alfie didn't fit the criteria, i.e. he doesn't have Dravet's or LGS. So I then said to him, okay, well, we would like to use some, you know, we're going to think about how to do that. And I don't want to do anything illegal, but how can we do that? And he basically said to me, if you talk to me again about using cannabis with your child, I'll report you to social services.
Wow.
So I was like, fine, okay. That relationship's going to end. So I went and found another doctor who at a different hospital who was really good. We went and had a month in this hospital where he tried lots of other things. We used immunoglobulins, and they did abate a seizure, but they didn't stop the seizures for 3 months. And we were told if immunoglobulins worked, that it was likely that they would work for 3 months. But it didn't work like that. But we know his epilepsy is based in an immune function problem because of the way he responds to treatment.
And you've got like zero precedent here to work
exactly.
on, right?
Well, exactly. And again, I probably sound like a bit of a sort of I'm not in the sense of Western medicine. Western medicine is treating a condition.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should treat his symptoms.
Right.
Let's forget PCDH19 because that doesn't mean anything. That's an umbrella term. There's 163 mutations on the gene for PCDH19.
Right.
It doesn't mean anything.
And if he's not experiencing the symptoms,
he's not responding to treatment like other children do with PCDH19. Mm-hmm. He doesn't respond to antiepileptics. Actually, antiepileptics make his seizures worse.
Wow.
So for me, I'm not a doctor, but I was like, well, let's look at his symptoms. His symptoms are he has seizures, and then when he's given steroids, they stop.
Right.
So, you know, let's look at that. So I talked to this doctor about it after we had a month in the hospital, and I said, I'd like to take him to Holland, and I'd like to treat him with cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, and his words were, you have no choice, because if you don't trial, you'll never know. Right. And I thank the Lord that I met a doctor that actually...
Amazing.
Was supportive of my choices and his father's choices, a decision for our child. So
yes.
That was in July 2017. And in September 2017, we traveled by ferry to the Hook of Holland mm-hmm. to live in Holland. And with our daughter, who was 3 at the time, and me and Drew, and our car packed up. And it was the most terrifying thing I've probably ever done, is to go and live in a country where I don't know the language and yeah. I've never been before. We would have liked to have gone to America, to an epilepsy center, or Canada, to an epilepsy center, but we just couldn't afford it. We didn't have the money. I was a full-time carer earning £60 a week, and my partner's a tree surgeon. We mm-hmm. didn't have the money. And so we went to Holland because we had the 111. So we knew right. we could get emergency care for free mm-hmm. because he was still in hospital every week when we went to Holland. So we had to time it that he didn't go into hospital. He didn't have a seizure while we were on the ferry. And I remember the night before we were going to go on the ferry, being awake all night, thinking, please don't have a seizure, please don't have a seizure right. because we won't get to Holland. I mean, it was incredibly stressful. And we went and lived there for 5 months, and we found an amazing pediatric neurologist who works in The Hague at a children's hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time she was doing a small trial using Bedrolite, which is a high CBD, low THC product that Bedra can make mm-hmm. in Holland. Well, they don't make it. They grow the flower and they sell it to the pharmacies who make it.
Right.
And we started it on the 17th of September. And the first 6 weeks, it didn't do anything, mm-hmm. which was very frightening because I thought, oh, God, it's not going to work. And then mm-hmm. once we got to 150 milligrams of CBD, he had, I think it was 17 days without a seizure.
Wow. Had that ever happened before?
It had when he was younger. As I say, right. he used to go every 8 months. But
right.
in the recent times, from age 5 to age 6, he was in hospital every week with hundreds wow. of seizures. So to go from every 7 days to a 17-day gap was mm-hmm. massive.
Right.
So we carried on and we got up to a dose of 300 milligrams of CBD.
Mm-hmm.
We added in a very small amount of pure THC extra. And from when he was put back on the product after we came back to England, which I can talk to you about as well, he had 10 months with no seizures,
wow.
which was amazing.
And why did you decide to add in the THC at that point?
Just because we wanted to see if a little bit of extra THC, it was only 3 milligrams, mm-hmm. would just help with seizures. And we did go 41 days with no
wow.
seizures
at all.
So
it did help, that combination.
Yeah, we felt that Bedrolite has THC in it already, but a low dose of it. So mm-hmm. we just added in a little bit extra to make the ratio different. And that's what I like about that sort of product, is that you can change the ratios, whereas
sure.
these fixed ratio products I'm not so keen on, because mm-hmm. if some children with epilepsy just cannot tolerate THC
right.
and then they can't have the product. So I think it's really important to have that ability to change ratios for
right.
different people, because it is an individualized medicine. And I think
sure.
that's something everyone must remember, that, you know, we can talk till we're blue in the face about sort of algorithms of how we prescribe, but
mm-hmm.
actually it's not about that. It's about people, and it's about everyone's individual endocannabinoid system needing something different. It's not about your symptoms necessarily. It's just, we are just unique people, and we need to just try a product and start slow and go slow and see what happens. And that's what we did, and that's what worked for us.
Right.
So after 5 months, we felt that we had enough evidence to come home. So our doctor wrote a very detailed report, and we had an EEG showing real improvement in brain activity, which was
wow.
great. But we had to come home, and we had to fight it, because obviously in the UK it was illegal.
Yeah.
So we couldn't get, our doctor wanted to prescribe, but he was blocked by his trust from prescribing.
Mm-hmm.
So we then had to basically get a Schedule 1 license to allow our doctors to prescribe. So we came home and we had to take Alfie off the product. So
mm-hmm.
we weren't committing a crime, which was really hard. And he ended up in hospital
yeah.
again every week to 10 days with seizures. Which was very hard. But we started a campaign in February 2018 when we came home with a campaign group called End Our Pain, which mm-hmm. are a campaign group or lobby group on medical cannabis on prescription. Mm-hmm. And I'm very lucky that I met them through my mum, who had spoken to the APPG on drugs reform in the government, and they'd put him in touch. You know, it was just one of those things, put in touch with people. And I met the guy, Peter Carroll, who's the director of End Our Pain. And I remember him saying to me, this is going to be like a roller coaster. It's going to be lots of ups and lots of downs. And mm-hmm. are you ready, sort of thing? And I said, absolutely. You know, this is the right thing to do. Right. So we went on. First interview was 26th of February with BBC Breakfast, which is a very sort of the daytime program on BBC.
Right.
And I remember the producer just saying to me, you've just got to go for it. You know, just be honest, be open. And I did. I was really emotional, because I felt like I shouldn't be sitting on breakfast TV begging for a drug that my child needed. Sure. He should just be having it. And we ended up meeting the Prime Minister in March, which mm-hmm. was great, because we were getting a lot of media, which was brilliant. The media have been really good in the UK about this, actually. I think they've been very, very supportive, and that's really, really helped move everything forward.
I mean, this story has gone all around the world.
Yeah. And we met the Prime Minister, and she agreed that our doctors could apply for a Schedule 1 licence mm-hmm. with the Home Office, which hasn't been done before. It's only ever been pharmaceutical companies whilst it's been an illegal drug.
Right. What does that mean, a Schedule 1 licence?
It just means that the doctor is legally allowed to prescribe a Schedule 1 medicine.
Got it.
Because Schedule 1 means it has no medicinal value. So it's like basically saying you need a license to, it's like cocaine, I suppose, you know, heroin's a Schedule 1 product. It's like and that's why I find it amazingly crazy to think that that's in the same scheduling. It's madness. And, you know, initially the government said that there was no medicinal value to cannabis and that they wouldn't help me.
Right.
And then I met the Home Office, and then I met the Prime Minister, and she said, okay, you can apply, your doctors can apply for this. But we had to work with the Home Office really closely because it had never been done before. So they were trying to put a pharmaceutical process onto an individual, which doesn't work. So in that sense, they had to go through a lot of the legislation to enable that to happen, which was really good mm-hmm. because it enabled them to understand the legislation, the rules and regulations, and help us to help them. And I think the people in the Home Office that we came into contact actually really did want to help us. And they did, especially the head of the drug. I mean, weirdly, we were dealing with the Minister for Fire and Policing, because it was an illegal drug in the Home Office. We weren't dealing with Department of Health, which was, you know, crazy. So, yeah, on the 19th of June, we had been working with the Home Office for 3.5 months. We'd had a meeting the week before with them to mm-hmm. say, you know, what's going on? We need this license urgently. And they said, okay, we've got all the information that we want. There's nothing else that we need. And then on the Monday, the 18th of June, I was phoned by the chief of staff, and he said, oh, but there's just a few more things. And I just went nuts. I'd waited 3.5 months, and my child was sick. And the next day I went on to Radio 4 on the Today programme, which is a famous, you know, radio programme that all MPs listen to. Mm-hmm. And I just talked about my meeting with Theresa May. And I said, you know, she met me, she looked me in the eye, and she promised to help me. And I'm the mother of a very poorly child, and that's not okay. You know, we're not playing politics. I'm a mother mm-hmm. and I need help.
Yeah.
And 3 hours later, we were issued with the first medical cannabis license in the UK.
Amazing.
Because I'm afraid to say, I don't like to do it, but, you know, you have to embarrass people sometimes to get what you want.
Yeah, well, that's advocacy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then on the 1st of November 2018, after the Home Secretary announced that there would be a review into cannabis, the Chief Medical Officer wrote a report saying that there was substantial evidence to show that cannabis can help with certain medical conditions. And the 1st of November 2018, the law changed, which we were over the moon about, because our story was part of that change. Unfortunately, though, access is not forthcoming, and that's something that I now work very hard on to get that for all patients, because it's really important to me that it's not just Alfie that gets his medicine.
Right. So this was what I was going to ask you. So the doctor got the license to be able to prescribe, was it the Bedrocan products that you were able to keep giving him?
Mm. Okay. Yeah, so we reintroduced that, and that's when he went 10 months with no seizures at all.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen, unfortunately, in the last year, we've seen some reoccurring seizures with Alfie. He does have a very refractory condition. His quality of life is still massively improved. Mm-hmm. When he's well, he's really well. But he probably has a couple of seizures now every couple of weeks, because we do need other products. We need choices. And what you do see in children with epilepsy, especially, is tolerance to a product. Same as anti-epileptics, same as opioids, same as any drug that the body gets used, same as alcohol, the body gets used to it. And so for me, having a UK open industry where choice is available to patients. So, you know, you speak to, obviously there's a lot of advocates in the UK for growing your own, and you speak to some of these people and they cycle six or seven strains, mm-hmm. Illegally, obviously, which is not my fight and I don't get involved with, but I do talk to people like that. Sure. And they say that's the most effective way at getting relief of your symptoms, but that isn't possible in the UK market at the moment. There's about three products available, right. And that's only privately. So I really want to be able to try other products with Alfie. I'm always very clear about this. This is no cure. My son still has a horrible genetic condition which causes him problems, but he's out of hospital and he's at school most days and he's learning and he's happy and I can work. Before, I couldn't do anything. I was a full-time carer watching my child fade away. So that's why I feel so strongly about it, because it's about giving people with chronic illness a better quality of life.
Sure. It's great to hear that Alfie's at school.
Yeah.
How does the community kind of react to his treatment, to your battle to get him this treatment?
I'm very, very lucky, actually. As I say, my mum was a big part of our campaign. She did a lot of work when we did our campaign on lobbying MPs and talking to people. And I'm very lucky. I have a very supportive family. My partner's sister does so much for us, and we've never been judged. I mean, I remember when I first said to my mum, probably 3-4 years ago, I wanted to use cannabis with Alfie, or I was looking into it. I think she thought, what? Yeah. You know, like, because we've all grown up in the last 60 years of cannabis prohibition, where people are told that it's dangerous and it will send us all mad. Mm-hmm. And you know, but I think because what I say and what it was really important for me is to inform myself. So I think if you're fighting for something, you need to be informed. You need to know what you're talking about, because if you don't, you'll come unstuck.
Yeah.
And that's what I say to all parents. And it's at the same to my mum. I told her what I knew and she was like, okay, this is interesting. So no, we're very lucky. We have a really supportive community. I'm glad actually where I live. I don't think anyone knows who I am.
Mm.
Why should they? I don't want them to.
You know? That's so interesting.
But it's good. Yeah. But people have supported us, you know, on Facebook and Twitter. We get loads of support. I've had one or two comments of, you know, when there's a national thing of people saying that it causes psychosis and things, but mostly the public are extremely supportive. And actually even the people in the media that I meet, all of them say, I can't believe this isn't available to you yet. You know, this has been 18 months and parents are now paying thousands of pounds every month to gain a prescription that Alfie has on the NHS. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. It's not fair, and there needs to be a solution.
Right. Well, I guess it's, you know, it's a very relatable story, a mother trying to take care of her child.
Yeah,
it's
exactly,
as simple as that.
Yeah.
What does Alfie have to say about his medication?
He has learning difficulties. Mm. He has behaviour problems, but he's probably got the mental age of a 3-year-old.
Okay.
He's 8. He says medical cannabis. He knows what medical cannabis is. He doesn't like the taste of it. And that's why I was talking earlier in my panel about bioavailability and how if a company or a scientist can come up with a way of getting a lot of CBD into a child with no taste, I think they'd be, you know, very successful.
Right.
Because
so far it's just oral ingestion.
So he takes oral oil, which he takes about probably 4 or 5 mils a day, because he has THCA as well. And he also has a CBG isolate, which is an anti-inflammatory. So we use that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to take a lot of oil and it doesn't taste very nice. So,
right.
But he does really well. And I don't think he really knows that he's better than he was, but he's happy.
Right.
And that's all most of the time. I mean, it's not perfect. We have bad days, you know, we have really bad days sometimes if he's had a couple of seizures and he's not feeling good and, you know, but mostly we have good days.
Mm-hmm.
And that before we didn't, mostly we had bad days. We may have one good day every few weeks, whereas now it's the other way around. We have one bad day every few weeks. So
yeah, it's all about changing that balance of quality of life.
Yeah. And I need to know, as his mother, I've done everything I can to help him be be happy.
Right.
That's really important to me.
Definitely. Mm. So what are the next steps for the UK in terms of access and regulation?
Well, basically, we have really good legislation. When the law was changed, doctors on the GMC register can prescribe any GMP product for any condition. So okay. There's no restriction on conditions. So in that sense, we've got some of the broadest legislation in the EU, although we're not in the EU anymore, which is very sad.
Separate story.
That's a separate yeah. B word. We don't talk about that in our house. So we've got good legislation. The problem is that the guidance is very restrictive. We have an institution called NICE, which is the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, who write guidance on whether something is cost effective and whether it's safe. Mm-hmm. And with medical cannabis, they've said that they don't think it's cost effective and there's not enough evidence to prescribe. So obviously doctors have freaked out and said, well, we can't prescribe. We are seeing doctors being privately trained, and there are private clinics now. I think there's two main private clinics in the UK, mm-hmm. which doctors are working in, but unfortunately there's no paediatricians at the moment. So I think there's about 180 odd private prescriptions in the UK, which is
fantastic. What are they prescribing? What products are available?
We have Bedrocan. We have Aurora, I think. We have Tilray. We have
so there are some whole plant products.
And there's a lot of quite a bit of flower prescribing for pain and things like that, but mostly it's oils. Mm-hmm. So it's a good move in the right direction, but I just think at the moment there's a lot of stigma about prescribing, so doctors are not allowed. And because in the NHS they have to go through so much bureaucracy, because mm-hmm. a doctor can't just prescribe a drug, it has to go to their internal medicines board or their clinical director to say, I want to prescribe this, are you okay with that? And they're just going to say no, because there isn't the RCT data to back them up. And again, this all boils down to negligence. Mm-hmm. And that really makes me very sad, because I feel like doctors can't sort of exercise their will as a professional to choose what's right. So like the families, for example, that I know all have private prescriptions. Their doctors are saying, this is great. Fantastic, but I can't prescribe. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right.
So at the moment, that's where we are in the UK. We had a big event last Wednesday where we were lobbying MPs, and the End Our Pain campaign team met with Matt Hancock, who's the Secretary of State for Health, mm-hmm. and told them all the problems that there are. There's an issue with, at the moment, there's no bulk input allowed. So it has to be one patient, one prescription for 1 month's supply, which is ridiculous, because before we've even got the first prescription in, they're having to have their second prescription. So if a doctor prescribes in a clinic now, they'll be looking to wait for at least 6 to 8 weeks for a product. That's ridiculous. Right. They should be able to go in the pharmacy and get it off the shelf like most other drugs. Sure. So that's something that's an issue, and I hope that that's sorted out. The bulk supply issue will be sorted out quickly. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to he has promised to get a round table of the stakeholders, so NICE, the MHRA, Home Office, etc., around the table to talk about what the problems are. Mm-hmm. I won't be party to that meeting, but I did a lot of media around it last week to try and push that forward, because I feel that we can find a solution.
Right.
He's not talking now about evidence so much. He's talking about cost. Mm-hmm. And the reason that the cost is so high is because of the restrictions on import. So I'm hoping that, we'll move forward. I mean, we won't leave it until it's better for people, because I know what it's like to be the parent of a sick child, and it's not fun.
Right.
Not fun.
It sounds like things are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, they are. They are. And I think that's, really, really good and really important. It's not quick enough for people who've got very sick children or who are in pain, but we'll keep trying.
Yeah, absolutely. Hannah, thanks so much for talking with us here today. It's great to hear about the progress and also that Alfie's doing better.
Thank you. Thanks, Alana. Thanks for having me.
I'm Alana Goldberg. This episode was produced by myself and edited by Michael Schaefer-Elmerman. You want me to say it slower, don't you?